is Demay. I'm one of the new producers of our podcast, and today I've got something extra special for you. A bonus episode featuring the UN SDG Task Force within the IUVA. For those who are not familiar with this task force, the IUVA UN SDG Task Force is all about supporting projects that use UV technology to protect public health and environment in low and middle income settings or low resource settings. The task force members, Nathan Moore, who's also a member of our podcast team, and Carla Wong, who's a PhD student at the University of Toronto, held a workshop at the IUVA World Congress in Dubai this past September, where they talked about improving the sustainability of UV disinfection systems in low resource settings. And we are sharing a part of that workshop today with you. Carla interviewed Professor Sarah Marks from the Swiss Federal Institute of Aquatic Science and Technology. Professor Marks is a world-leading researcher in the evaluation of new water technologies and is an advisor to the World Health Organization on small water systems. Coming up, Carla sat down with Professor Marks to discuss some of the key challenges to achieving more widespread global access to safe drinking water and key considerations for the adoption of relatively new water technologies like UV. We will share more information on the speakers and topic in the episode description. I hope you will enjoy this bonus episode brought to you by Wavelength Podcast.
So I'm Carla Wong. I'm also a PhD student at the University of Toronto. I'm coming from, I guess, like around 6 to 8 years working in the WASH sector. So I've worked for WaterAid and as a consultant before, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, and also working right now in Latin America. Specifically around, I guess, like the sociology, hardware, software intersection, particularly with using UV LEDs at the moment. So it's fitting to have this conversation since we're coming from the IUVA and also meeting with you. And so it'd be great to get some of your feedback on some of these questions you have.
Terrific. Super. So I'm Sarah Marks. I am group leader of the Water Supply and Treatment Group at EOVAG, which is a research institute in the ETH domain in Switzerland. We're located just outside of Zurich. And the research institute is fully dedicated to the topic of water. So it's a great place to go to work. And my department specifically focuses on projects in low and middle income settings, with water being my specialty.
So Sarah, given your extensive experience in the sector, we would like to know from you generally what you feel are some of the key challenges, maybe at this point in time, as we're, you know, halfway through the UN SDGs, the progress towards SDG 6 and particularly around water quality and safely managed water.
Yeah, great. Thank you for that question. And I think when I read the question originally, I saw three key challenges. So I'm happy to. I think there's quite a list, but it was an interesting exercise to think through the top three. So, I mean, I feel like at the center of the challenge regarding progress towards SDG 6.1 specifically, so access to safe and affordable drinking water supply, it has a lot to do with the heterogeneity of progress. So if you look at a global map of progress since the onset of the SDGs, we see actually some incredible success stories over the past years. And I think it's important to highlight that as well, that the global development community has really come together around these very challenging targets, which are quite a step up from the previous MDGs. But still, in certain contexts, as you're noting, you know, progress is really lagging. And in fact, we're likely looking at not meeting the SDGs in like certain pockets of the world. So what we know is that this tends to be the hard to reach areas. Maybe that could be geographically, but also there can be areas that are challenged more by things like supply chains or difficult terrain. My group at the moment, my research group, is working in Western Nepal with Helvetis under their Integrated Water Resources Management Program. And one of the biggest challenges in this particular setting has to do with just road access and how dispersed households are. And that's a really interesting design challenge for a water supply system, and also regarding the data, the supporting data. So I would say progress is challenged by hard to reach remote rural areas, but we also see major challenges arising due to areas that are extremely dynamic. So transition zones outside, like the outskirts of cities, as well as small towns that are rapidly changing. Population levels can be either contracting or expanding. And this can happen on a very short time scale. So of course, this presents a major challenge for water supply access, which tends to be, you know, much more static or require more time and planning. On top of all of this, it's important to mention the challenge of climate change. So I think that presents, that sort of amplifies the two challenges I just mentioned, where accessing difficult to reach areas, as well as areas with dynamic population growth or degrowth, can just be exacerbated under changing climate. So that would be my, you know, the top answer.
Yeah, thank you. Those are some three great points. And I guess based on that, earlier you mentioned that there has been significant progress in the UN SDGs. And I'd like to touch on that. So maybe I'd like to hear around, you know, based on these successes globally, what are some of the key factors that maybe have contributed to adoption of these systems and sustainability of new technologies in these successful contexts?
Yeah, I mean, this is the exciting part to talk about, is what is working and why. And I don't claim to be an expert on, you know, there's so many stories to tell on this front. And I think at the workshop, many people will have personal experience to share on successes for water supply treatment and water system, water service delivery. What we know, what I'd like to do is highlight a bit from like a higher level, from the perspective of what we're calling the Water Compendium. The Water Compendium is a document that aims to provide a higher level of information on technology options from source to consumer. So we're using the functional group approach, where every stage of the water supply system is a functional group with technology options, and each technology option serves a function. So this compendium aims to bring together all of those technical fact sheets into one place, so that people interested in designing systems can learn sort of take the first step in understanding, for example, various UV treatment options, but also how it fits within the larger water supply system. So when working on this document, and it also is accompanying a new document, the Guideline for Small Community Water Supplies, this is a WHO document, the guidelines as well as the compendium are compiling interesting case studies. And there are a few important success factors, I would say, that have been highlighted in both of these documents. I guess I can just begin to speak on the three. Okay. So the first, a proactive risk-based approach. This is, well, what I'll say is investments in technologies for water treatment, and including new technologies, including UV, these need to be balanced with investments in operations, maintenance, and management. So that would be the entire surrounding environment and what makes the new technology work. So this will support effectiveness and sustainability of water systems. And the proactive risk-based approach is absolutely critical in this context, because in the absence of that, a more reactive approach to water supply management just comes with major public health risk and challenge. By the time you're measuring something end of pipe and getting the data back, so many people have been exposed. So the guidelines, as well as the compendium, offer a framework called the Water Safety Planning Framework, which provides sort of a very step-by-step and iterative package for addressing risks and hazards. What's interesting too is There is the accompanying sanitary inspection toolkit, which is now available online. And this is like a very user-friendly usable package for addressing risks in a very like systematic and user-friendly way. And this package, as well as the framework, the water safety planning framework, they're designed to be flexible and incremental. So I think that it's this sort of using this guideline, for example, will really break down what is meant by a proactive approach. I think that's really underlying a lot of the successes we see, especially in rural areas. A second success factor that I wanted to highlight is I would describe it as the user perspective. So finding a match between what water users want and need in terms of service level. So not necessarily, they maybe don't have an opinion on the specific technology per se, but just, you know, how convenient is the water, the cost, the schedule that WaterPoint is available to access. Taking this into account when kind of walking through those functional groups, designing the system is absolutely critical. Maybe it goes without saying, but it can be surprising how often the user's perspective or needs are not like fully integrated into the planning process. So I think that participatory element explains a lot of the good stories and the success cases that we've seen. And on the flip side, when users are left out of the equation, of course, there can be major sustainability challenges. And I mentioned climate resilient water services. I think, yeah, just to reiterate that the guidelines, the WHO guidelines mentioned include a specific focus on climate resilient water supply, as does the compendium. So this is like a set of recommendations for augmenting management teams, including climate expertise, assessing priority risks, and then developing management procedures that are resilient to shocks and stresses. So I think this is sort of becoming a more like universal and global recommendation to really consider a climate lens for all new programs. And that includes new technology implementation. I have a few more points, but maybe I'll pause there.
Yeah, no, that's really excellent. Thanks, Sarah. I love how well stated this proactive approach is, really considering user perspective needs and this participatory element. And I think that's really relevant for a setting like this IUVA workshop, where we're trying to understand a little bit more about external perspectives and maybe who and when to engage other stakeholders. So I guess one of my follow-up questions would be, what would you say are some best practices or for people who are in industry or consultants to consider to engage? Who are some of the people who should be engaged when considering, expanding into areas like, addressing the SDGs to improve water quality? So any best practices that you might think offhand or case studies you could refer to?
So asking about the stakeholders to engage, like, for example, when planning like a new supply or a new treatment approach. It all goes hand in hand because UV has such an interesting role to play in the disinfection, like a low cost and like highly efficacious approach for disinfection. So of course, like in the areas where progress is most needed, I would say it's absolutely critical to put training sessions like into action and find out how those trainings can take place. They should happen. Probably repetition training is a good call for anything involving technology with the need for replacement parts or any sort of challenging operational aspects. But aside from, operational training and focusing on the operator themselves, there is, of course, the user engagement ahead of time as a key stakeholder, understanding the level of service, the distance, preferred to travel, be it to the yard or to a public water point. Within the community members themselves, there's a lot of diversity anyhow. So speaking specifically to women, people living with disabilities. And it's very important to understand the perspective of lots of groups within the community. Some of our work, we think a lot about the feeling of ownership towards the communal water supply and the role of various actors in building up that ownership. So there can be natural leaders present in the community who can serve as representative, and just understanding those community dynamics from a ground level perspective is one, it's expensive and time consuming, but a necessary part of the planning process. Other stakeholders, I think people at the workshop are the best for answering this, you know, for their particular locale. But of course, there's the local government, all the way up to like national level public health surveillance officers, and trying to align approaches, align data collection strategies. It really is an entire network of stakeholders. But I think the main message to share is I really believe it begins from the bottom up to be sure the users' needs are being met.
Yeah, you do mention gender dynamics and, you know, other considerations, intersectional considerations within a community that often go unlooked and require a lot of investment and time and resources to be able to do this from the ground up. And I think those are really important points for this workshop. We've had conversations before with Clarissa Brocklehurst and some other individuals who have, you know, mentioned, you know, things, technologies aren't the silver bullet for improving water quality. And so I guess, what do you have to say to that? I guess, what are some of the misconceptions that people with a very technical mindset sometimes bring? I guess, what are these some of the messages you might want to share with these individuals who might be so pigeonholed in their one technology?
That's a great question. It's a difficult one. I'm an engineer myself, so yeah, take this response with that in mind, that I do think engineers, even including myself, like through my training, sometimes we're looking always for something better, cheaper, faster, you know, more streamlined, easier to carry in your backpack, whatever it may be. I see all kinds of exciting water treatment, things that promise rapid results for your water quality with just the click of a button. And I agree with Clarissa, like there's no perfect technology for every location. I think we know that by now, but I would even challenge us as a community of technicians and engineers to consider that most of what we need is likely now available. Of course, innovation has a role. Students are really particularly talented with coming up with new designs or new, you know, cheaper ways of delivering, say, chlorination, a passive chlorination device. This is one project we're currently working on, and doing it, you know, with localized materials and for less money. I think there's a role for those sort of projects. But all that said, I think it's very important to just consider that we may have all the options that we need, and it has a lot to do with the resiliency of supply chains and like the ease of use and just the ability for users to really, not necessarily users, but I would say the water service providers themselves, to make good decisions based on reliable data. So I'm a big fan, even as someone with an engineering background, in looking at the soft factors that support technologies. Most of our work, I will say, at the moment is focusing on the role of fit for purpose laboratories in support of technologies. So that's a topic I would love to talk about at length, but, you know, maybe a little outside of the scope. But the main point being that good, reliable data drives good decision making. And there's a challenge in and of itself in collecting data, organizing data, aggregating it, and understanding it. So that's an important focus too.
Yeah, I think you just brought in a topic that's really exciting that we would love to dig into, but of course we're running short on time. So I'm going to just wrap it up with the last final question, but just to ask you, What are your some of your takeaway thoughts, messages that you might want to share with the individuals in this workshop?
It's a great question. The final thoughts, I hadn't really prepared anything, but based on this conversation, I mean, I think it's very exciting to hear you both as organizers asking these questions in the first place. It shows that the right conversations are being held. I would encourage the participants there, following on this last question that was just asked, to really think about how can people with technical expertise and strong engineering background really collaborate and work closely with stakeholders of all kinds, especially people who are concerned with the non-engineering elements. So how can we deepen those relationships? What are the tools and the resources that are being underutilized? Of course, we hope our compendium and also the related guidelines documents will play an important role here. But we would also like it to be an exchange with the practitioner community, and they can let us know, like, if something additional can be added to the community, if there's a new resource to highlight. So I think just this interdisciplinary exchange and bringing in the academic community as well is one message that I'd be excited to share.
Okay, awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah. I think this actually is helpful for Nathan and myself for organizing this. It actually gives us a much clearer objective and route to take in this session just from that short conversation. So we really appreciate it.
I hope so. And I don't know if I covered everything I had hoped, but we can't get to it all. So